Greetings, witches. This is Hex Rated, where myself, Blackbird, and my good friend Scarlet talk about witchcraft plus a lot of other things. This week, and I know it's been a minute, but we have been traveling all over the place. We went to the Sacred Space Convention in Baltimore, right outside of Baltimore. And we have created for you a three-part installment. We recorded every night we were there with our impressions of the conference. So welcome to night one of the Sacred Space Convention. I hope you love it. Thanks as always for listening.
Put a spell on you. Cause you're mine. Do, 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 do. You better stop the things you do. I ain't lying.
Ladies and
gentlemen,
other
presentations.
Yes, we are here at Sacred Space, no extra S. This is Blackbird.
This is Scarlet. I'm going to try not to say Pantheacon.
We're Hex Rated. This is our show, and we're here to talk about it.
We're going to word vomit at you before we pass out and fall asleep. Scarlet, me, I had a 4-hour plane delay, and then was sitting on the plane, unable to disembark for about 45 minutes. Then there was all kinds of traffic consternation for Blackbird to pick me up at my terminal. Having to go through all terminals A through D to... I just spat cough drop at you.
It's really okay.
Anyway. But we would like to power through and give you our fresh impressions.
Fresh impressions.
Freshpressions.com.
All right. So we just literally moments ago, before I inhaled a sandwich or after I inhaled a sandwich, we went to something called
Hecate, She of Many Names.
This was a lecture, which it, so in this, at this, conference, they are presenting lectures in the schedule as workshops. Which is ish. It's mostly a lecture, and you'll have an element of either like a meditation or something like that. So, like, kind of a workshop, but mostly a lecture. All right.
Well, this one, I will say right from the top, we had issues with. It was kind of a hot mess. It was mostly a PowerPoint presentation about stuff like you could get from Wikipedia about Hecate. But I will say that Homegirl completely buried the lead. Because I could go at length about my, you know, picking apart her presentation style,
sure,
and her demeanor and what information she chose to incorporate and everything. But the end, which got crammed into like the last 20 minutes, what should have been the entirety of
it. I agree. Totally. I would have, had that been my like presentation that I was giving. And no, like, it was her first time presenting at a conference like this, which she freely told everybody. And it was a packed house. Like, it was real packed. But she was, it seemed very unpolished. Like, no practice work possibly
being
done. Yes,
she was visibly nervous and kerfuffled.
But that's fine.
That's
I understand
fine.
That. It's not that. It was more like... Well, okay, so let's just talk about how the end should have been the beginning.
Okay, let's go there and we can work our way backwards.
Yeah.
So she presents, which I think is really groundbreaking, honestly.
True.
It are three archetypes that she has identified through her own, by her own admission, unverified personal gnosis, of three archetypes of, like, kind of the Hecate priestess. So,
right.
If you are called to Hecate... which she defines herself as a high priestess and has several sisters in priesthood with her, that she identifies as the torchbearers, the
key holders,
and the Struffalos.
Or the wheel people. Like torch people, key people, or wheel people. Right.
And that's very interesting. Those are three of her major attributes. She has others. I think that maybe that could have merited some more discussion as to why she narrowed down to those three. I don't have a problem with it, but there's a lot to talk about there because she has other attributes. Sure. Snakes, dagger.
Yeah. I think those might be the three famous symbols. Like,
yeah.
Most everybody knows about the torches, the keys. The wheel is less...
Yeah.
To me, the wheel is a little less famous. But, yeah, so what's interesting to how she broke these types of basically Hecate devotees down is torch people are the people that, like, initiate the ideas, like, initiates the spark. So what I wrote down, and at the end we did this meditation on each type, and what I really liked is there was a series of questions that in her meditation you were being asked by Hecate, or assumed form of Hecate, and for the torch people, these questions were, or a few of them were, I only wrote down a few, but what angers you? What makes you passionate? Where are you in front? And I really liked that because I really wanted to focus on, like, what my answers were for that. So that was interesting. Even though I mean, if I'm going to try to fit myself into that doesn't resonate with me. I don't think I want to be one type of archetype. I'm a mix of all of them, which I think that fits better. But I still think the value is the answers to those questions.
Oh, definitely.
Right. So that was interesting. And then the key people are the people that are behind the scenes. Yeah, like key people are the people behind the scenes. They don't know, like, they don't have to tell you how it works. They just know that this is working. And they're going to make it.
They're the pit crew.
Yeah,
you know, like,
right.
They're yes. The theater techs. They're the people behind the scenes.
They're the bench coaches.
They're
yeah.
the people that are
yeah.
actually making it run. They're right. not in it for the glory. They're right. just like, I know how to make this efficient.
Right.
Just let me do it. So people that are Virgos. People that are Capricorns.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Torchbearers. People that are Aries.
For sure.
Where are you in first? Yeah. Everywhere, all the time.
Everywhere.
I must always be in front.
Where are you in front? All
literally, figuratively, we must always be first.
That's true. And then wrap it up with wheel people, eh?
Wheel people, she says, are the creators. I kind of see that as kind of similar to the others.
Torch people, yeah.
Or even the key bearers, in the sense that they're the ones that are sort of the tactical element. You know, they're kind of more the execution.
She was saying the wheel people are the people that can actually create things out of raw material.
Yeah,
which
so I
thought
guess
of you for that because of your sewing abilities.
Right. I guess it's kind of more literal creation as opposed to, like, management.
Or, so like, creation of an idea. Right.
So,
but that, like, to me, like, that should have been the essence of the presentation and diving into... maybe, like, call and response, a little bit of participation with the audience about, like, how, you know, how you see that working in your life. And that can get kind of squirrely in that big of a crowd. But she clearly had a couple of people in the audience that she knew that were from gathering from other discussions that they were also devotees of Hecate. They could have spoken to their own, like, what they got out of that meditation, or just ask them, some of us regular people. I mean, whatever. But she had plants in the audience that she could have, like, gone to for, like,
yes.
prompts and shit.
Yeah, and I felt like, so the basic format was, she was like, you know, take a deep breath, imagine you are in a place, depending on which of these archetypes it would be. And then she said, you know, you look at the sky, there's phase of the moon, insert phase of moon into Mad Lib.
Right.
And then you see a insert place off in the distance and you walk to it. And at place, you see archetype of Hecate, who invites you to hold actual object and then throws some rapid fire questions at you. And then you, you know, kind of walk away mulling over these things. And one thing that struck me about the unverified personal gnosis origin of these is I found these to be very inspired.
Yeah, agreed.
I thought that, you know, whatever...
I agree.
In her conscious mind when she's writing, I don't know how great of a creative writer or how evocative she is.
Right.
But I thought these were really well written.
Yeah.
I thought the images of what she, like, I was able to picture exactly what she meant.
Yes.
They totally resonated with me as the physical embodiment of these archetypes.
Yes.
The places she described, I really liked. Felt very, I could picture it. It felt familiar.
Yeah.
It really, it generated a lot of details in my mind of filling in the blanks that were things that I thought were very rich to cultivate. Are definitely even places that you could go back to in meditation to analyze or to keep touching, keeping in touch with these archetypes and explore them further.
The one thing that I will say that I enjoyed is that she did in each of her archetype meditations tied it back to something that was in the lecture. So that was a good point. I mean, I liked that.
But, I mean, obviously, I have no doubt that she has a strong connection to Hecate.
Yeah.
And that these meditations that she wrote were definitely sourced from her own trance and devotional work with Hecate. Because they just had that ring of...
They had that feel. But the lecture did not.
Right.
So that's the part that I was not... Like, so a lot of it was stuff that we learned or that, you know, of course... we had known previously, but a lot of the stuff that we went deep on with Jack Grail in that Hecate series. So it was a lot of rehashing for us of stuff that
Rehashing the Jack Grail material. It's like rehashing a Wikipedia article.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. I mean, there were very
few... No, Jack Grail goes way deeper.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's like, here's an element of Hecate being, you know, obviously she's the goddess of liminal spaces, but like he takes it back to his own research or his own UPG, and like it just broke, like
that broke my
right
brain.
Right out the gate, he's like, she Titans are the personification of these like forces of nature or concepts.
Right.
So if she's the goddess of thresholds, she is the threshold. I was like, whoa. Yeah.
Blah, blah.
So this was mostly just kind of going through, like, here are the places she was worshipped in antiquity.
Yeah.
Here are the top three sources of classical literature that we refer to when we talk about Hecate.
I mean, I can't say that might have been a value for some people in the audience. It was the presentation skills were lacking for me. There was not a fire as if I was watching a really great lecture from a really great professor.
It just wasn't original research or anything. I mean,
even if it wasn't original research, I think the presentation could have been more intriguing.
It just wasn't her own take on information. It'd be one thing if she's like, well, here are the three main sources, you know, the Orphic hymns, the Homeric hymns, and the Chaldean oracles. And, you know, she has, like, a hot take on one of those, being like, you know, I really think the Homeric hymns being the OG is my source.
Yeah.
So here are some comparisons and bring your own stuff to it. Because basically she was just, like, reading off a list of facts.
That's what I was noting. So when she did bring her own stuff, like, for example, and this I wrote down, she is a teacher of...
Love it. Oh, I wrote this down, too. Go for
it. She is a teacher of English as a additional language. I didn't know we don't say second language anymore. We just say additional language.
Oh, yeah, good point.
That's great. But she said that, you know, with her kids in this second, you know, additional language class... they are in a liminal space because they have to go from one world to another world and back. And that is her way of doing Hecate's work.
So I love that.
I thought that was great. Like, dude, if she would have just done that,
I could have heard a whole lecture about that.
Yes, exactly. So, like, I went into it with an open mind. it was like super packed in the room, which already gives me like a little bit of anxiety. And I also, I had to sit directly in front of her. The only seat left was right in the front row. So I like sat right in front of her, which was a little like, it was bad because by the time she rolled around to the awesome meditations, like I was real sleepy. As Scarlett has mentioned, we had a long ass day yesterday. So it was like, I just wish that would have been the whole thing.
Yes.
Right.
My point here in criticizing the lion's share of the presentation would be, don't read from a PowerPoint. That's just per form. If you're using a PowerPoint, either have it as like keywords or headings so that people
go off script with it. Right.
So that people can kind of have like a scaffolding or like be able to take notes from that.
Yes.
And then pictures or maps or things that are, that are a better visual medium than speaking.
Yes.
So, and also like be confident with your UPG.
Yeah.
Like
we
don't need this like, you know, just list of Hecate facts. Like we don't need it.
I want to hear your UPG.
Yeah, I want to hear that. That is what you are bringing, and it's brilliant. Like, yeah,
right.
I really enjoyed it, and it definitely seems like she is tapping into something that is greater than herself.
Yeah.
That is coming from a source that is either like, I don't want to say outside, deeper yes. within herself.
Right.
And is more uncensored.
Yes.
Because, you know, she, I think, like a lot of us has anxiety with public speaking and everything. Yeah. It's a lot.
And I think she was censoring herself, too. I think she was like, I do think that was happening.
I think she really felt like she needed to stay on the script.
Yeah.
Because she didn't trust herself to riff.
Right.
And
she could have totally
riffed. She should have
The riff should have been the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, take the training wheels off, girl.
Hilarious is we weren't even sitting next to each other, and we both basically had the same take.
100%.
That's great.
Probably two things from the main part of the presentation that I wrote down that were interesting that I'd like to just kind of name check so that I can file it away for later.
Yes.
One, she was showing several antique images of Hecate with her torches.
Yes.
And there were several where she's stabbing people with the torch.
Yeah, man.
Or like hitting them with
it. I don't think I've ever even seen that.
And I love that.
That is, yes.
I think that's great because
it's Aries.
Yeah, it's like, how can I fight and do fire at the same time?
Oh, you can.
Can I stab you with fire?
Yes.
So clearly, that appeals to me so many levels.
Greatly.
The Venn diagram is now just one circle.
Just one big circle. Weapons, fire. Fire weapon. Done.
Yeah. And then the other one was when we were talking about the wheel of the Strophilos, she mentioned the idea of it maybe being like a hinge on a door.
Oh.
And I was like, ooh, take it sideways. Put it in a door. I was like, that's a really interesting idea, too.
That is good.
Because wheel, to me, I'm either thinking of, like, a wheel on a car, wheels on the bus go round and round, or, like, a disc, like the actual Strophilos that you spin that's, like, this whirly-gig device that we've talked about. But other things that turn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it being a doorway, obviously her being a goddess of liminality and thresholds and crossroads and stuff.
Right.
I like the wheel as being the hinge on a door. I just thought that was a really interesting idea. I also wanted to point out that there was a contingent of power crones all along the first row. Oh. It was all ladies with gray hair, natural and bleached.
Amazing.
And that was pretty cool.
Contingent of power crones, unite.
So, I would love to get a transcript of her meditations,
because
they were very short and sweet, but I liked them a lot, and I would like to consider the questions at my leisure.
Same. Yes. Let's read some of the other questions for the other people, because, like, I read the torch questions, but then the key questions were, I really liked this. This part was brilliant, and it was, like, sucked that it was right at the end, because it was, like, time to go, too. So
she was,
like,
that was the other thing, is that she became increasingly aware of, like,
the time
limit.
Yeah.
So then it's just faster and faster, and like, just trying to get through stuff, and, like, it was making me anxious, because there was, like, this hurtling climax feeling of it building a bit, and it was...
Right.
It was making us all very bejiggly.
So the key people questions during the key meditation was, where, what do you think?
What do you know?
Where are you ignorant? Where are you proficient? I loved that whole series.
What do you think? What do you know?
I mean, just stop right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Holy shit. Just not even answering the question. What is the difference between thinking and knowing?
There's a lot of difference. So great.
I love that we were not sitting next to each other. At all. We could not see each other. That was totally what I wrote down.
That's great. Okay. And then the wheel questions, of course, remember, keep in mind, this is at the end and we are wrapping up. So she's just like not throwing out as many cool questions, but... The two that I wrote down were, or just the one I wrote down was like, where are you the creator or the craftsman in your life?
Mm-hmm. I forget what the other question, because there were some that were good.
Was there another one?
Yeah, and...
I thought the wheel was, that was it.
But yeah.
I don't know.
The thing that I was thinking about is, because she described spinning the Strophilos, which if you've ever used one, like really felt real to me.
Yeah,
like she's definitely used this as a tool.
Yeah.
She's talking about, she's spinning it, and she's, you know, asking you these questions about, like, what are you the architect of? Or, like, what is your design? Or, like, what are you going to create? And I thought of, as an ADD person that has a million ideas and zero execution, I like the idea of using the Strophilos as a meditation tool to spindle energy.
Mm-hmm.
To then dispense as focused on a particular project.
Oh, I like
so
that.
If I'm like, I need to buckle down, I need to tell myself I have a fake deadline.
Just grab your
Strophilos and just do it, and use the Strophilos. I've talked about this at length, but I tend to overplan.
Yes.
And use that as a procrastination tool.
Sure.
So have a little sit down, give myself a few minutes to do all the overplanning, and spin the Strophilos and use that frenetic brainstorming energy and spindle it, like literally spindle it in this Strophilos and inside myself, and then be able to concentrate it like a laser and actually execute the task.
Almost like on the outspin,
put
it into the task, like put that energy into whatever the thing
is. Yeah, it's basically winding it up so that then I can go and just do the damn thing.
That's great. Yeah, agreed.
And then we also have, as we were walking back in our delirious state, we both were singing about the Strophilos, and we were like, Strophilos in the sky, to the tune of Reading Rainbow. So have fun and have that earworm in your head.
So that was the last thing we did. Now we're gonna talk about the things we did separately. Who wants to go first? Mine is not that super
long. You go
long.
First because it was kind of
okay. So I went to another lecture that was called Our Mystical Brains, and it was about trance work, and the presenter is named, their name is Siggy. They are a Norse practitioner, an oracular practitioner. They referenced a lot of Diana Paxson's, and that was great. But they have a degree in neuroscience as well as social work. So I thought that was really fascinating. And anyway, they mostly kind of took you through like the evolution of how we just don't know anything about states of consciousness, really. Like, there's just no, like, we know we have very little science about what is actually, people talk about brain waves or whatever, but like those waves are just like, the brain waves are like just representations of things that aren't really like, that's not really what's happening inside your brain, the waves, you know?
Right.
Right. It's just like...
It's like a shadow on the wall.
A pictogram.
Yeah,
right.
it's like picking up this shadow that the actual brain activity...
Well, and the thing that I really liked, that there was like a little, you know, like, oh, it's like a meme where it's like, here's one thing, here's something else, here's the third thing, here's whatever the fuck.
Yeah, and it's like a diagram of somebody with their, like, mind expanding. So the
first one was, like, phrenology, which we know is not good and was basically super racist.
Yeah, it was reading bumps on people's heads and being like, and, oh, people with this shaped skull are like, better, racially inferior.
Right, exactly.
Not cool. We don't like it.
No, we do not like that, and neither did Siggy, so that made me happy. Second thing was brain areas, which is also not as overtly racist, but, like, you know, saying your frontal cortex does a thing and your abdula, like, that's not necessarily true scientifically either.
Yeah, when you look at a brain, it's not partitioned in that manner.
Right.
It's not like ventricles in your heart.
Well, and it's not like one part does this one thing. That is not, like, not, that's what I was taught.
That's what I was taught as well. It's
apparently not right. So
they now know that if you have damage to your brain, you can overcome that sometimes. Right. And so different areas will light up in other parts of the brain to compensate for the area that was damaged.
Right.
So you can rewire your brain to continue performing the same task, but with different locations in the geography of the brain. So idea that different parts of it have specialized.
So brain areas are
not a real thing.
So the third thing was networks. And that's, like, where we're at right now in the science is networks, neural pathways. That's, like, the new science. And then, you know, then the last picture was, like, whatever the fuck we come up with next, which is true. Like, it's always evolving. And so that was really interesting. I liked I liked learning that brain areas are kind of trash. I didn't really know that until this talk. So all that to kind of, like, just give you a brief overview of states of consciousness and how, like, you know, we don't really know a whole lot scientifically. And somebody in the audience said, we don't know a lot objectively, but we know a shit ton subjectively. Like, yeah, absolutely.
And that's the problem. You can't science inside someone's brain.
Right, exactly.
Like, you can do, like you were saying, like an EKG, but, like, that doesn't tell you about what the person is thinking at all.
Right, right. I really liked their take on what you call a person that's a hypnotist and the person that is getting hypnotized, because it's usually, like, it's like hypnotist plus what do you call the person that's doing it? Like, somebody being whatever
subject.
Yeah, yes, but
the victim.
But they used the definition of inducer and receiver.
Okay,
which I like. I really like that. And since we have seen Diana Paxson's group do oracular things to oracular, like, presentations, that definitely describes what I am seeing them do. Like, there is definitely an inducer and there is somebody that is receiving. So I think that's also interesting. They were very specific about talking about how safety is important. Agency is important. They said, I have a real beef with stage hypnotists that are basically hypnotizing a member of the audience in order to make fun of.
Yeah, make them do something embarrassing.
Right, something embarrassing. And Siggy was like, no, not having it. That's not cool. And was very specific about the people that came to the lecture. Like, you all do not need to ever be in a state where you do not feel comfortable or, like, don't be taken advantage of, basically.
Yeah.
So I think that was great. Good notes. And just basically a breakdown of how trance is just a very heightened sense of suggestibility. You know, like, you are in this state where you're not necessarily, like, you're conscious maybe at first, like, you're operating with your waking brain at first. But then, you know, as someone's voice changes, as the inducer's language changes, and they did talk about language especially and how that is used, just how you can kind of, like, go into a state where you kind of are still aware of what's going on, but you're no longer operating on like normal waking brain, like cognitive awareness things, which we know because we've done it. Like we both work with that, with journeying. I'm sure a lot of you do too. So that was cool. And then they did a little, well, they did ask about like, how do you all use trance work in your spirituality? And a lot of people, you know, journey work. I personally think I've started to use a lot of chanting, like repetitive things to get me into that state, because I really do just like, so we did a chant earlier, mantra earlier, and I just like, I don't know, something like clicks off in my brain where I just am not in this room anymore.
Right.
Yeah, which is, that's the altered state of consciousness. It's great. I liked this. There was a little note in one of their slides that said, oracular divination, what if it's not as rare as we think? There's just some like way you can tap into the oracular part, because I've never really tried to do trance work and also be an oracle. Have you? Well, I mean, I guess that's kind of what we do when we're trying to channel.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But it's less of oracle in the sense of like,
I'm gonna answer the ancient questions.
Yeah, the ancient Greek tradition of you come with a question and someone right. answers it for you.
Right.
I mean, we certainly do that with tarot.
Sure. But I'd like to try it with trance work now. I think that would be something to do.
That would be interesting. Because usually the altered state is, if we're doing oracular work, or like, you know, like Diana Paxson's group doing like Seath and stuff. Right. It's really more of like letting the voice or personality or energy of this other being or deity come through you. And it's, they're more kind of giving advice.
Right.
They're not like, don't go to war against Sparta.
But aren't they channeling too? Are they channeling or are they?
They're channeling.
Okay. Right. Which they didn't really talk about in this.
But it's under the umbrella of altered state.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's my notes on that. It was good. I really liked them as a person. Like, Siggy had a really great presentation style. Again, it was also a PowerPoint, but went off the didn't just read the slide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, spoke, you could clearly see images or words on the slide, and then they used other words to describe what
used
you were
saying. Used other
words. Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed that, and I thought the audience was very receptive. They were very involved and engaged, and there was another person there that said she does like theta healing. I was like, I've never fucking heard of that, but I need to know about that. That sounds fucking cool. I need my thetas healed.
Yeah.
All right. So that was mine. So it was overall, that was a decent start.
I went to deep ancestor meditation, which was described as being kind of more of a workshop, but was actually just a ritual.
Nice.
So that was good. And before we left, we were trying to decide which ones we were going to go to. And I was kind of like, oh, deep ancestor meditation sounds gross, which probably means I should go to it.
Yep.
So I will give you a quick rundown of what the structure of this was, and then I will tell you what I experienced.
Ooh.
So, first, they had the space set up. They had, like, kind of an altar. I took some pictures of it. I'll throw it up there. They didn't really spend any time explaining any of that, which I would have actually been into. Yeah, but, you know, that's just me personally. I'm not sure it would have added to the actual goal of this ritual, but I was very curious about that. So it was put on by Anne Groa Sheffield, who is involved with the Troth, which is a heathen organization, and I think was formerly part of the, I forget what it's called, but it's a druid group. And So she had, I think, about 3 helpers on hand.
Wow.
And they also handed out a handy-dandy outline.
Nice.
And you know how I feel about fucking outlines and things.
We like outlines.
Interestingly, they just did a, it was basically, it's not like a script, what the people leading the ritual were doing or saying. It's more just, we're telling you the order of operations, and then the text or the liturgy in it is basically what the audience would be saying as a call and response.
Okay.
So not overloading you with a bunch of text, things that you like, so you're reading along, which I thought was good. So yeah. Gave it, because, so what happened was they warded the space, so kind of just a circle casting, didn't really say anything. She just had people, like her doing helpers, it. Walking around doing it.
Nice.
And then she called her guardian, or what she described as a spirit ally. So it sounds like, you know, a familiar or a fetch, or maybe in the Norse tradition, you might call it a philia or a dis or something. Mm-hmm. And she intoned that in Old Norse. So, loving it. Love it. Yeah. Love it when people speak dead languages.
Please do it.
And she had a drum and was drumming it. It had a really powerful sound.
Nice.
That was really cool. And so she's basically calling out to the guardian to hold the space and protect us from evil. All
right.
They kind of did some setup, and then they did a offering and prayer to the ancestors. And we all responded, ancestors who wish us well, we call you. That is very important, and she pointed that out before we got started. Ancestors who wish us well.
Yeah, not shitty ones that do not wish us well.
There were many, many disclaimers in both the description and before we got started, being like, look, lots of people come from very different backgrounds.
Families.
Have, you know, not great relationships with people they are genetically related to.
Right.
You know, had abuse related to that. Right. It's not even that you're not close. You know, for me, I'm adopted. So,
right.
You know, a lot of people have, like, very complex / straight trauma.
Sure.
To do with their family. So this was ancestors who wish us well. People we want to talk to that have something constructive to bring to the
not
table.
Not somebody here to make a bad time.
Yeah.
That's right.
And then offering prayer to the gods and goddesses of the underworld. And we responded, deities who guard and guide the dead, we call on you. And then an offering and prayer to Hecate. Hecate, queen of the dead, we call you, we all said. So then to get us started, she did like a little bit of what she called body work, but it was basically kind of a ground and center.
Okay.
So she was like, you know, feel the ground. And she had us tap. So you tapped on your collarbone and then down your arm and then back up the inside of the arm.
Make you feel safe.
Other side. And then tap on your kidneys, under your ribs and your back. And then if you're able to bend over... That was another thing. There was a lot of reassurance of sit, stand, whatever your mobility is, do that. And then so you go down your legs if you're comfortable reaching down there and back up again. And that to kind of shake loose any blah, any kind of not good feelings or tension, physical, mental, spiritual. And then kind of... Then go over the same place, but kind of do like a wipe, being like, yeah, get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then she just had us do like a, imagine, you know, earth energy grounding coming up, and then, you know, astral, solar, lunar energy coming down and washing over you.
Yeah.
And I, as I did it, I felt very strongly, like at first I was like, pulling up from the earth, and then like very soft hands, like kind of washing. And two of the things that she said that I really liked was, she was talking about, you know, wash away your past, wash away your future. You know, to just leave yourself open to this and not attach meaning or
significance
a narrative
to a time.
Or to just be at this crossroad,
right?
And so I thought that was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So then they were like, okay, so you can either sit or lay down. Close your eyes, get comfortable, which, as a side note, like, having an outline and telling everybody what the order of operations is going to be was really helpful, because for most of the thing people were sitting or laying down with their eyes closed.
Yeah.
So giving everybody like a rough order heads of operations
up, right. yeah.
was very good technique of yes. managing your crowd and, you know,
remember so this that later.
Once, yeah, yes. so that once people were meant to be in a receptive state, they weren't like opening their eyes, fumbling around with a piece of paper, being like, am I supposed to be standing or doing
right.
something, whatever.
Right.
So, thumbs up. That was yep. really good preparation. Yep. I dig
yep.
it.
Yep.
So, she's like, lay down. And so, oh, and then the other thing that I thought was also very good stagecraft was, it was a fairly small group.
Yeah.
I'd say like a dozen or a dozen good. And a half
that's
people.
Perfect. Yeah, perfect.
So, for all of this up until this point, she was just using her... you know, speaker voice, like her own voice. We could all right. hear. It was fine.
Right.
But then, but you know, she's projecting a little bit.
Sure.
So, for this next part where she's kind of inducing a trance, she, got on a mic and was just speaking low.
Okay.
So we could hear it, but it's not like she was shouting at us.
Right.
And I was like, that was a very good technique because obviously we need to be able to hear what she's saying. But on the other hand, like, it's not really conducive to the experience she's trying to cultivate if she's, like, shouting
right.
at us.
Just, like, speak low into a mic. That's nice.
Yeah, so speak okay. low into a mic that is not super loud.
Yes.
So that was very well that's calibrated.
Good. Yes.
Very good. Yes. Technical aspect of presenting for a group.
Again, keep in mind.
Thumbs
for
up.
One day
yes.
when we might present something. Right.
So, you know, she says, she was saying... you know, look inside, like look inside your body, look inside your cells.
Okay.
And then inside your cells are these helixes of DNA.
Yeah, man.
And they're, you are the only person in the world to have ever or will ever have that exact same DNA.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're a twin, you would still have yeah. epigenetic yep. slight differences.
That's right.
And she goes, okay, so think of a time when you were a child, when you were safe, when you were warm, and she, again, big disclaimers. She's like, you know, maybe that was frequent. Maybe that was a precious moment
right.
to you. Maybe you were with loved ones or you were with people. Maybe you were alone. Maybe that was when you felt safest.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just think back to a time when you felt, like,
safe. And good. Yeah.
And she was like, okay, now think back to this DNA helix and imagine it unwinding
okay.
into two separate pieces. One right. is your biological mother's, one is your biological father.
Got it.
And she's like, now think, you know, your mother and father were once children who also, when they were a child, had a moment where they felt safe and secure and they were sitting around a hearth or a fire and they felt warm against the cold outside.
Mm.
And I thought that was really interesting because it's not like love your so-called biological parents.
No matter what.
Because lots
right.
of people do yeah. not, or don't
right.
know them, or right. whatever.
Right.
Or love them, but maybe it wasn't a parental relationship. You
right.
know, like, who knows?
Right.
But, you know, to just move past it, connect to them on the level of them being a child.
Right.
I thought that was a really simple,
it's kind of nice.
It's not, you don't have to get into a whole lot of icky feels.
Right.
It's just a really simple thought. It's not exonerating anyone for their bad behavior. It's
just that you are having this experience and they had this experience
and
at one time,
it's just echoing.
Too.
And then she was like,
right.
okay, and then
now
next.
Now echoes back to your
now
grandparents.
Think of your grandparents.
Yep.
And yep. think of a time that they
were,
imagine
they were
that children. They were children and at one time they felt safe and warm from the cold outside.
This is great. I
and
love this
And she's like,
technique.
And now great grandparents. And she's like, and keep going back. So
wow.
now
wow.
you're maybe you're sitting around a fire. Now it's not electric lights anymore.
Right.
Now it's firelight. Now you're in, you know, a tent and there's just like there's a fire going up to a skylight in the sky and keep going back.
Yeah.
And this web is extending out. You're going back and back. And of course, you know, I'm speeding it up, but like this is meant, you know, she keeps saying go back,
sure,
go back
sure.
deeper. And so it's meant to be a trance induction.
Oh, yeah.
And so she says, you know, keep going back. And she's like, now you're on the savannah. You're in Africa, the cradle of humanity.
Fuck
so,
yeah, shit.
When she said deep ancestor, I did not know she was talking about deep. And
that deep.
You know me, prehistory, archaeology girl.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, hey.
I can 100%
yeah.
go to Africa.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's go back.
Let's do it.
200,000 years.
Fucking I'm there.
And so the cradle of civilization. And you know, she started repeating, "We're one. We're all one. Yeah. You belong here. This is your tribe."
I would like this.
And she's like, so they're sitting around a fire in the savannah. It's a little bit cool in the evening, but you're warm by the fire. These people are greeting you. And I immediately saw this old man with white hair and black skin, and he's a little kind of diminutive, and he put his hand on my face. And people were coming up and, like touching me and embracing me.
Oh, whoa.
And then this woman emerged who was kind of dressed a little bit like the Reverend Mothers in the new Dune Part 2.
Yes.
Where, you know, they're swaddled in, like, kind of these robes.
Yes.
And it's casual and practical. It's not, they're not exotic or expensive materials.
Ooh, right.
But there is this sense of gravitas of this, dignity of this authority.
Okay. Of this, like, matriarch.
Yeah, this matriarch. Yeah. And I totally forgot what she told me her name was, and I wouldn't be able to pronounce it anyway because it had a click in it. But so, you know, she kind of takes me aside and
away from the nice
man. So then I'm kind of, well, just, it's not like, even like she takes me aside, it's just sort of, like, everybody else kind of fades away.
Yeah, okay.
And I see her flick. So she first appears very old. I mean, just like, you know, weather-beaten skin. You know, someone that's lived out under the African sun their entire life. Right. You know, and but then she's flickering between that and being young.
Oh wow! Oh wow! Ooh, that just gave me chills.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And so we were talking, and you know, she was saying these different things to me, and
in English.
Yeah, but then she said, yip was a word for, she's like, you're like the fox, the yip. And she called it yip. So guess what, linguists? I have just UPG'd a deeply ancient word that may not be have a direct descendant in modern languages, but it is Eep, and that means fox.
So there you go.
There you go, guys.
What if it really does? What if you, like, look
what if
it
we
up?
Get in a time machine?
What if you research it and it's actually...
You can't. Our reconstructed words only go back, and reconstructed proto-languages are still considered...
Yeah.
By some kind of dodgy science, sure. But, I mean, there's a scientific method to it.
Yes.
But, I mean, even our deepest reconstructions really only go back maybe,
But what if it's, like, a 10,000 now years. Word is what I'm saying. What if it's, like, a current word and
that
you
would
just,
make
like...
No sense.
Yeah, but it'd be, like, came into your consciousness somehow.
Okay. Anyway, research is going to happen.
Yep. Okay.
So then I feel myself, like, sinking into the sand, and I realize I'm, like, going through their burial rituals, which everything that happens is, like, archaeologically correct with, like, prehistoric civilizations.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm feeling the sand kind of scour my skin and, like, drying me out and, like, mummifying me. Oh. And then they're painting me red with ochre, which is also a very common ancient burial practice in prehistory. And then I see these red threads coming out of me.
Oh.
So the whole trance induction about seeing these strands of DNA splitting and branching and branching and like seeing...
They are inside of you and now they are
But now
coming
they're
out.
Coming out of me.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so then the tribe is taking them from... I mean, not taking them, but they are...
Holding
being,
them.
They are connecting to them and... And then, you know, my heart is feeding the tribe.
That's amazing.
But in a good way, not in a scary, like...
Zombie way?
Not in an Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom kind of way.
Right, okay.
And then she holds up a feather that's red. And in that moment, I understand, because it's stained with blood, but it's, like, impossibly bright. Like, it hasn't turned dark brown. And then it's also, it's a feather, and it's light, and it's made of organic material, but it's also brilliantly red like a ruby, which is inorganic. And then lastly, it's red and glowing like an ember, like fire.
Shit.
And...
The feather?
Yeah.
Oh.
She's, like, so, like, she's holding that, and,
Wow.
So, yeah, and then I see, so
what does
all these...
mean? What does the feather mean?
It's this idea of, I guess, like, this ancestral, like, red...
Connection?
Yeah.
Oh, like, shit! Yes!
Yeah, and so then, these threads of lineage that, like, I followed backwards to get to this place and are now coming out of me and connecting me to this ancient tribe. Hands around me, like delicate hands, start knotting them.
Shut up.
And they begin braiding or crocheting like a macrame of these.
Around you?
Around me.
Oh, like a cocoon?
Like a cocoon. But then it becomes a veil. And I realize that this is like a spiritual or astral or magical tool or garment that I have now, and which I have several of those. Like, we've all done meditations where, like, some spirit or deity gives you, like, a key.
Yes.
Or, like, some kind of talisman or, like, a leaf or feather or whatever. Yes. So I see this as now something that I can use in my meditation.
Yeah.
As it, because it's, like, thin, like, sewing thread thin.
Oh, wow.
Red threads that have been, like, basically macrame'd together.
Oh, my God.
Into this open weave.
I wasn't thinking
shawl.
Of them being that thin, but okay. All
and
right.
And so I wrap that around myself.
Amazing.
And then, basically, it's really weird because she ends up starting to kind of tell us to come back.
Okay.
But before that, like, in anticipation of that, this definitely happened before, but it also feels like it happened as she was saying this. But
okay.
I know it happened before, but
right.
That doesn't make any
that's
sense.
Fine.
But anyway.
No, I get it.
But then I see that, like, this
Garment
is then being wound up on, like, a spindle. So it's basically, like, it's, like, compressing itself.
So you can take it with
you. So I can take it with me and, like,
keep it in your
heart.
Yeah.
But also the winding, the idea of these threads, like, winding back onto a spool.
Is bringing that back into your history. Like, you're walking back into the future.
Into the present,
the present, yeah.
And so, and then she, because she was doing drumming during it.
Yeah.
And it was really good because she told us, you know, I'm going to start talking and then this drumming is going to begin and that will, you know, you can just, I'm going to stop talking and you feel your feels and talk to your ancestors or whatever.
Right.
And then the drumming, the beat will change and that will be the signal that we're kind of winding down or whatever. And then, you know, I'll guide you back.
Okay.
Which was also, again, very helpful.
Great.
You're dealing with people who may or may not have done trance before.
Right.
It's weird. You're in a room full of people you don't know and you're like
you're laying
there
down with your eyes closed.
With your eyes closed.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
And you wonder, am I doing it right? Am I supposed to be, you know, so.
Right.
You've got to set a stage where people are comfortable to, one, like, be there with their eyes closed.
And kind of let go, yeah.
And not be self-conscious and also not be like, am I missing something? Do I need to be looking? Like,
am I
doing it wrong?
Right.
And also be calm enough to be in, like, a receptive state.
Sounds really well crafted.
It was really well done.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that. I wrote this down later, which is why it's at the end of my notes. Before we got started before she told us to close our eyes, she was like, okay, so just take a minute, look around this space. Like, you know, it's a ballroom I've never been in before because this is the first ritual. Like, I've never been to this hotel. This is the first ritual that we went to.
Right.
Never seen this place. Never been to Baltimore. Room full of people I don't know.
Yeah.
And this is also really smart, and I wouldn't have thought of this. If you're doing a ritual for people that are in a trance and you want them to, like, come back into their body eventually, normally you would tell people, okay, like, you know, start feeling yourself back in your body, like, you know, wiggle your toes, whatever, imagine this room. Like, you're asking people to visualize a setting that they've never been in before.
Right.
So she's like, take this moment to just kind of take in where you're
look
at.
Look around. Yeah.
Look around. Look at the people next to you,
smart.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's genius.
That's
really
smart.
Really smart.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to doing trance induction.
But you're in a place that you know.
In
right.
my house
Same.
With my friends.
Yeah.
So coming back to that place and time is not difficult.
Right.
But me having to, with my eyes closed, visualize myself coming back to my body, sitting in a room I've never been in.
I'm not going to visualize it.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Again.
Smart. Yeah,
giant, I mean,
that's great.
Flying colors on, and this is this was a very short ritual. It was very simple.
Yeah, because you were done earlier than me.
It was pretty quick.
That's great. God, you got a lot fucking accomplished.
Right. Oh, and then at the end they were, they fed us dates.
Oh, nice.
Because you know, like, you want to ground, you want to physically, like, give people food. And also,
sure.
like, in... So it has a practical aspect in terms of, like, getting you back in your body.
Yeah.
But also, you know, in their tradition, you know, she's like, humans, like, one of the major ways we symbolize having community with people is sharing food with them.
Yep.
And she was like, and she did pig dates because, one, dates are super, super ancient.
Yeah.
They were...
They're also shelf-stable, I mean.
They're super shelf-stable. Also, like, they're...
delicious.
They're delicious. Yeah. But also, like, they're not a domesticated... I mean, they are now, but, like, people have been eating dates since before... agriculture.
Yeah.
Like, they just grow on trees in the Middle East.
Delicious.
And they're the best.
Yeah.
So, this is, like, a very ancient ritual food that predates, like, you know, bread.
Predates.
Oh!
Dates predate.
Oh, no!
Oh, I did it. I did it.
You got me.
Dates predate.
You got me. You got me good on that one.
My bad. That's all I got.
But also, as it turns out, you know, they're gluten-free. They are vegan. They tend...
No GMOs.
Yeah, and they tend to not trigger any kind of allergic reaction. So that was cool.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed all of that very much.
That sounds really amazing, and I kind of wish I would have done that too, but that's okay. No, it's good. We usually come to this knowing we're going to divide and conquer, so it's good. I'm sure we'll each experience cool things all weekend, so I can't wait to do more. I do want to... do you have more notes about this?
I don't have more notes about rituals, but I do have silly end notes about... our travels here and
yes
things.
Well, I need to talk about the store I saw at the mall.
So
I had to go immediately to the mall that is next door to the hotel because I forgot all of the things I talked about in our podcast. I have
a list of things that we have already realized that we forgot that were specifically things we told
you all to do
to bring.
Yes.
In the last episode, we were like, these are things that you should definitely bring.
Yeah.
Here's a list of things we told you to bring that we ourselves did not bring.
Have.
A second pair of shoes. This was a deliberate decision on my part.
Yes.
But because I was really trying to economize my
space.
Bag space.
Yeah.
But didn't bring it. I also didn't bring my tarot cards because, again, was trying to conserve space. Straight forgot a journal.
Oh, wow.
That was
the
thing that I told everybody to bring. Did not bring a journal.
Luckily, I had an extra. Many extras.
And then you...
I have forgotten my... comfy socks.
You forgot comfy socks.
I brought zero squishy cool socks.
And you forgot your
headphones which
so
I need
leads
for meditation.
Into your story now.
So I am like, which I don't remember the socks though until like 20 minutes ago.
Just now. She was
so
like, wait,
like,
where are my socks?
Yeah, so no socks, but I did notice the headphones immediately. So there's a mall directly next to us and it's like a nice mall. It's like the Galleria. I mean, but with, you know, somewhat normal stores.
Except this one, apparently.
No, right. So, but there's this cute little... Well, so I'm going there with the sole purpose of looking for two non-mall things. Headphones and cough drops. I'm like, okay, if I can get this accomplished in this one trip, good on me. And I walk into this cute little... It's like a weird little stationery store almost where they have journals and cute little things. It's called Typo. And they had a pair of cordless headphones, like over your head headphones, not earbud headphones. $40. I'm like, whatever, I'll take it. I need headphones immediately. And nobody has earbuds in this entire place. And I'm not buying Apple. I'm not buying like AirPods because that's $200 that I do not want to spend. So I got the, and then there was a little bodega inside the mall. And yes, I mean a bodega, true bodega. Being run by Jamaicans, I was like, fuck yes. Like just in the mall, just a store. But they had lots of cough drops and therefore I bought them for you.
Much appreciated.
So I'm walking though through the mall because I really had to walk. I had to walk about a mile in the mall just to find the things I'm looking for. And I walk past a store that is called It's All Leggings. and I don't really, I think there is an exclamation point at the end. So, but I didn't remember that when I was telling Scarlett about it the first time. So I was just like, I went out by this store and it's called It's All Leggings, which I think is a funnier version.
It's All Leggings.
It's All Leggings.
It's like, oops, All Towers.
Oh my God.
Oops, It's All Leggings.
So that was exciting. Not as exciting, but something I didn't know existed. And I don't know that I'm thrilled or unthrilled about it, but there is evidently Lucky Charms ice cream at Stone Cold,
Cold Stone.
I wish it was called Stone Cold.
Stone Cold Cold Stone.
Stone Cold Cold Stone. See, they're missing an opportunity there. But those were the things I saw at the mall. And now I have to go back and get socks. So, all right. What about you?
So on the way here, Blackbird was telling me about her life in the bucolic south of New Jersey and telling me about all the agriculture that takes place there. And apparently there's quite a lot of blueberry bushes. And she uttered this sentence, and I had a kind of delayed spit take. She goes, yeah, the birds shit purple in the spring.
It's true.
And I was like, that is one of the weirdest sentences I have ever heard.
And then I said, I think it could be a first sentence of a book.
And then the book will be called New Jersey, A Tale in 8 Parts.
I don't know why.
I don't know why she said that.
I don't know why 8.
But hey, everybody, we're going to hold Blackbird to this. Yeah. She's going to write a book. I mean, it might be like an anthology of like 8 different stories on a theme. It might be 8 chapters or something.
It could be 8 completely different stories.
Yeah, but it's called New Jersey, A Tale in 8 Parts. And the first sentence is going to be, the birds shit purple in the spring. And then another really out of context quote is, I was talking about showing you a song.
Yes.
And I was like, you didn't look at it. You listened to it.
Show me your song.
And I go, you know, ears, the eyes of the sides of the head.
So good. So good.
And then lastly, as we drove through Delaware for a second, I was like, let's learn about Delaware. So I was reading the Delaware Wikipedia page to Blackbird as she drove.
Oh my God.
And apparently, so their current motto is endless discoveries.
Endless, but you know, we had a big discussion about endless or not.
Well, okay, so I was like, their motto used to be, up until like 2015, was it's good to be first.
We don't know.
And I actually couldn't find out what they were first in.
Like, were they the first colony? Were they the first?
I don't think they're. I mean, Virginia. No.
So we don't know what they're first.
We don't
in.
Know what that is, but the big dick energy
that. Yes.
I like it.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like Endless Discoveries is not as good.
No.
But what I found out was this was part of like a years long campaign that was very like that was workshopped and brainstormed and like
it was workshopped.
They did like double blind testing of like test markets.
Yeah.
And okay, so the alternate mottos for Delaware that were rejected was, and this was clearly the rough draft for what became Endless Discoveries, was 96 miles of discoveries.
I kind of like that better because it's like honest. It's true.
It's 96 miles. But it's all discoveries.
All discovery. You don't have to say.
But I think someone was like, 96 doesn't sound that big.
Well, I mean, okay.
And someone was like, okay, well, what
endless.
Endless.
Well, like, that's, like, a big difference between 96 and endless, don't you think? Like, there was a large gap.
I like the contrast of a small, finite, physical distance, but then a limitless...
You could say that.
A limitless geography of possibilities.
That could be a whole...
That's the paradox, is that it is it's a tiny state with endless possibilities. But anyway,
the best one that should have won
was Della here.
I can't even look at you.
And it's
Delaware?
Not, Della here. Oh, but it wasn't even Delaware ? Della here. It's just
Della
D-E-L-A here. Dash here.
Exclamation
Delaware,
point.
Della here.
That's right.
So.
Oh my God.
So with that.
With that, oh wow, we almost nailed it at an hour. That was great. Also, roll down your windows when you go over any bridges over water. That is our new
thing. We have arrived in Baltimore at the hour of it. What will go down in its history is one of the worst
tragedies
of
Baltimore.
The Francis Scott Key Bridge disaster that happened 2 days before we arrived.
Yes,
we are not anywhere near there. It did not cause us any problems.
No,
but now I'm more scared than I was before of going over bridges over water.
Very much so.
I was already pretty scared
not
of
great
it
within the first place. Yes. So on that note, this was our first installment of our Sacred Space
conference coverage.
Live
coming at on site.
We're not posting it live, but it is on site.
Yes,
so
we are recording live from Baltimore.
I will
right
have
now.
To be doing some editing immediately. All right.
We're going to crash.
Thanks so much. And
hocus pocus, bitches. Hell yeah, we knocked that out.
Where's the thing? Oh, God.
Yeah, leave that in. Leave this all in.